welcome to the Brown Bowl podcast. This is a podcast created for the love of food and meant to support you on a journey to making more vegan choices, no matter where you are along the way. I'm your host, Kim Sujovalski. I'm a teacher, a certified plant-based cook, and for years, I've been helping people go vegan or take more steps in that direction by teaching you how to cook delicious vegan meals, get back in the kitchen, and improve your relationship with food. So are you ready? Lace up those trainers if you're going for a walk, or grab a cup of coffee, get comfy on the couch, and listen in. Hey everyone, welcome back. Welcome back to the podcast. So remember last week when we had that episode all about spring and picnics, and I told you how we were having this amazing spring weather and we were barbecuing outside. Well, joke's on me because the weather completely turned on us and we're back to wintry days. So we've had snow, which is very strange here where we live. It's not that typical, especially this time of year. We've had 2 days of snow. We've had cold weather coming back. We've had lots of wind, lots of rain. It's been so crazy. I think I jinxed it by doing that episode last week. If you didn't listen to it, it was all about meal ideas, vegan meal ideas for picnics and potlucks, and it was great fun. So in spite of all the terrible weather we've been having a ton of fun, and I have a couple of things to share before we head into today's episode, but a couple of things we did this past week. One of them has me so excited. And if you follow us on Instagram, and if you don't, go follow us. We're at Brown Bowl on Instagram. But if you follow us on Instagram, you probably got glimpses of both of the things I'm going to tell you about. So the first one is that they opened up a new drive-in theater in Madrid, where we live. So this is so exciting because I used to love going to the drive-in when I was a kid. And there's something so exciting about sitting in your car, old school, right? And taking some food or buying some there. This place is incredible. It had a little diner and you could buy popcorn or burgers or sandwiches, things like that. It had some food trucks. Unfortunately, though, not a lot of vegan options, but I'm sure they're going to work on it because food trucks generally here in Spain, they have tons of vegan options. We have like a little food truck festival once a month, and there are so many vegan options. It's crazy. And every time we go, there's more and more and more. So I know that this is coming. This theater just opened up, so I'm going to give them a chance. But we had taken some delicious sandwiches and chips and guacamole and some cookies, and it was such a blast, especially because of the movie that was playing. We saw The Neverending Story. And if you don't know what movie that is, then I feel extremely old. It was a movie that both Carlos and I grew up watching, and it was so special. I've seen this movie so many times. I think only next to Labyrinth, the movie with David Bowie and a wee young Jennifer Connelly. Only next to that one, I think it's possibly the movie I've seen most times in my life. And the best thing about this movie was not only to, you know, see it again and see it on the big screen, which I never got a chance to do because I always saw it on, you know, my mom had videotaped it on Betamax. And if you don't know what Betamax is, then I feel really, really old. And so this is just, it was really special to see it again. I had seen it since then. It's not like I hadn't seen it in, you know, 30 years, but it was so special to see it on the big screen. But what was even better was this whole scene, this whole date night that we had in our car, which got us packed with, you know, pillows and blankets because it was really cold outside and, you know, the car is turned off, so there's no heat. And it was very smart of him to take that because it really did get cold at one point. And we took our food and we were just, you know, talking and sharing thoughts about the movie because we remembered it differently, or it was so cool. He had seen it so many times as a kid. I had seen it so many times in my house as a kid. We didn't know each other. And now we were having this perfect date night. I think it's on one of my, you know, it's one of my top favorite memories that we've spent together. It was such a special day. I loved it so much and it was so much fun. I can't even tell you. So if you haven't seen some of those childhood favorite movies, go watch them, because you think they're going to be horrible and the, you know, special effects are going to be horrible. All you're going to feel is the giddy excitement you got as a kid, and you're going to remember the dialogues, and you're going to remember it was so much fun. And this is one of my favorite memories ever with Carlos, having seen that movie now in the drive-in. So that was one thing we did, which was a lot of fun. And the food we took was so good. And you can check out that episode from last week, because it's the vegan chorizo sandwiches. That's what we took. So you could check out that episode to see how you can make them at home. But another thing I did this week, which was very weird, but I have so much to talk about this, and maybe we're going to create a special episode, because you know I love to talk about body image issues and body positivity and staying away from dieting and the whole dieting concept and mindset and focusing on health. And it's such a kind of special topic for me, especially when it comes to body image. And what I did was I went to the Barbie exhibit. So there's this exhibit that's going around the globe about Barbie, you know, the doll. And somebody was visiting here and she wanted to go, and I told her I would go with her. And I'm very glad I went, because it kind of ended up being like a sociological experiment. Not an experiment, but just it was like an eye-opening experience. Let's call it that. So this exhibit, it's really, I think, meant for kids, right? I think kids would love it. They would love to see all the Barbies, you know, from the first one in 1959 to the new Barbies. But for me, it had a very different meaning. And the exhibit was really interesting, because of course you get to see, my favorite part was seeing all these original vintage boxes the dolls came in. Of course I played with Barbies as a kid, as most girls have done, right? And, you know, it's just, it was different to see it this time around. I saw it from a completely different perspective. First of all, I saw it from the perspective of girls who are different from Barbie, which is practically everybody, right? Having a completely different body type from what you see in this doll, which is, you know, tall and blonde in the majority of cases, and slim, extremely slim, tiny waist, big boobs, straight hair, right? How many people can say they have all of that in one body? Almost nobody, right? So that's the first sign right there. If you're a little girl and this is the girl that you're seeing and the girl you're playing with, there's already something going on there. But on top of that, it got even scarier, because after about 2004 or 2005, dolls start getting crazy slim, thin. But I mean ridiculously thin, thinner than the original Barbie, which, by the way, is already stick thin, right? So this was even thinner, and the clothes start getting tinier and tinier and tinier. And I'm not a prude. I'm not against, you know, wearing mini skirts or anything like that. But I'm just saying that this body was just completely fake and something completely unattainable for most people. And girls are growing up with these dolls, and you could easily see the change from the original dolls, and not even the originals from 1959, but the ones I grew up with in the 80s, right? You could see the changes in the body. The body of the doll changes. And that was pretty scary. The other thing that was pretty scary is that all of the Barbies have these really cool names, right? Like Heart Barbie and Picnic Barbie and Barbecue Barbie and Vet Barbie and all the stuff, right? Except for the Black Barbies, which were all called Black Barbie. It didn't matter what occupation they had or what clothes they had on, they were all called Black Barbie. Imagine what it feels like to have a doll that doesn't even have a name like the others, right? It's just Black Barbie or Black Ken. It was really eye-opening. And of course, there's maybe like one brunette. I don't think I saw any redheads. You know, there's like this one body, there's this one possibility. Now, I'm realizing now as I talk about this that we can turn this into a whole other episode, and I don't want to distract from today's topic, which has nothing to do with body image, but I just thought this was something that we had to talk about, and we probably will at some point. Now, the exhibit did have some cool parts to it. And they were the dolls that were inspired on, you know, actresses of the past or characters from films. So that was really cool because I don't know how they do it, but they actually turn, they actually make the face of the doll exactly like, for example, Audrey Hepburn or, you know, the characters from Grease or Cleopatra. And that part was really remarkable. It was my favorite part of the exhibit. But of course, same body, same tiny waist, same big boobs, same shiny straight hair. And another part that was really interesting were the designers that had created clothes for Barbie dolls. And most of them have, you know, from Prada to Chanel to, you know, if you're interested in fashion, this is something that was, it was cool to watch. And I just thought it was fun. Then we had an international Barbie section. You could see all of the different nationalities that Barbie has had and all the different occupations that Barbie has had. 90% of them were flight attendants. So lots to say about Barbie. I feel kind of ridiculous talking about it because it's, you know, it's got nothing to do with today's topic, but it was really eye-opening. And I think we have to look at these things because these are the things that our kids are playing with, right? And they're the messages they get over and over again. So I thought that was something that I had to mention today because I just went and I just had to get that off my chest. There are pictures, by the way, in our Instagram account. There's like a mock-up with a couple of pictures. You can see Sandy from Grease and Audrey Hepburn and the very skinny girls. By the way, I forgot to mention one Barbie out of the whole exhibit, which had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Barbies. There was a curvy Barbie. She appears around 2014, 2015. So too recently, from in my opinion. She's not really that curvy. Spoiler alert, she's not really that curvy. So just some food for thought. And of course, we are going to head into today's episode. But before we begin today's show, I want to tell you about a resource I think you'll really love. And of course, you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm talking about our signature online program, My Bramble. It's what I call our Big Kahuna. And it's an ongoing program. It's all in video formats. And it's a program in which I teach you to cook delicious vegan meals, get organized. I give you support on your vegan journey, as well as tools to help you find a blissful and balanced place with food and eating. This is another thing we cover in the program. But most of all, we cook and we cook and we cook and we cook and we cook in a way that is simple, teaching you kind of why things are done in the kitchen so that you can become a total pro and you can create vegan meals that everyone goes nutty over. So that's my mission with this program. And you know, there is so much more. There's so much more included in the program. So I want you to go and visit mybrownbowl.com, www.mybrownbowl.com to learn all of the details and give it a try. So once again, that's www.mybrownbowl.com. Now on with the show. Okay, Barbie rant over. Now that we've gotten those announcements out of the way, it's finally time to tackle part two of our food pairing series, right? I hope you've listened to part one. It's a while back, so you might have to hunt for that episode, but it was a really exciting episode. In part one, I told you kind of why understanding food pairings plays such a huge role in improving your cooking skills. It is so important. And it has to do with learning how to look at ingredients and kind of decide to put them together in a recipe, right? So when you're trying to cook at home, you're not using a recipe, this is the main thing you have to focus on in the beginning to develop that skill, right? We have to know what foods kind of go together or what pairings are really, really spot on so that, you know, we kind of have a little edge when it comes to preparing our recipes. So to me, nothing screams freedom as a cook, like being able to kind of venture out of tried and true recipes, right? Things you've done over and over again from books or, you know, from our program or from the internet, and start creating meals that come from your own creativity and from your own taste preferences, right? We all have different taste preferences, and it's so cool when we get to create something that we're really craving, that we're really going to find enjoyment out of. So this is just a great way to kind of flex your cooking muscle, but it's also a fantastic way to help save you time in the kitchen, right? Cooking without a recipe. it can help you develop your skills, but it saves time because you don't have to measure out all the ingredients, follow the recipe. It is faster when you cook like this. So it's something that is great to kind of develop. It's a skill that's great to develop. It also helps you lose the fear of cooking, and it kind of takes perfectionism slightly out of the equation. And when that happens, you're not afraid to experiment, right? And you go into that kitchen with confidence, and magical things can come from good ingredients. So if you have some good ingredients and you know how to put them together, that's all. That's all you need. And you're going to have good results. And of course, using all the techniques you're learning at Brown Bowl, it's match made in heaven. So, you know, food pairings. And by this, I'm not talking about food and wine pairings, which is how this term is normally used. I'm talking about foods and flavors that really go well together, like those little secret weapons that go well together. For example, peanut butter and jelly. That's a basic one that everybody knows. But I'm going to take you deeper into kind of culinary land. And this is the base. This is the base for this type of cooking without recipes, for cooking by instinct and trying to create your own dishes in a fast way. So it really does help streamline the process. Now, we went through a very big list in part one of the series. I think there were about 50 different food pairings and ideas on how to use them together. So that's full of information. You can either find that at brownbowl.com by using the search bar and typing in food pairings, or you can go to the post that goes with this episode and find the link there, or you can find the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever you like. But today, I'm going to give you even more, right? We went over some in that episode. Today, I'm going to give you even more in the hopes that this kind of inspires you to come up with some ideas for dishes of your own, dishes you can make, right? So I remember how even as a little kid, and I hear I'm talking about 5 or 6 or 7 years old, maybe. So whenever my mom wanted to give me a prize or a present for something, or for example, I got an A on a test, or it was my birthday, and she asked me what I wanted, I always asked for 2 things. The first thing was always a given. It was always a constant. And I wanted to be taken to the hot dog and ice cream parlor that it was this place. I remember it so fondly. It was this place that had kind of giant plaster made sundaes and banana splits decorating the restaurant. So it was like this, you would walk in and you would see this ginormous ice cream sundae made out of plaster in the entrance. And you would have them all over the place. You would have a hot dog sticking out of walls and things like that. It was so cool. And here I would always get hot dogs and fries and a banana split with sprinkles and whipped cream. So that was one thing. I always asked to go to this place. But the second option that I always picked, it had 2 versions. And these were kind of games that I like to play. And this had 2 varieties. Remember, I was a very young little kid. Both were equally as fun. So I would kind of alternate between these. So I would sometimes ask my mom to let me play with her scarves. Some kids play with, you know, their mom's makeup. I played with her scarves because she had drawers and drawers of scarves. And I liked to make a huge pile. And of course, I'm probably remembering it bigger than it was. But she was the queen of scarves. So I would make a huge pile with all of them and I would jump on top of it. I would tie them end to end to see how long it would go. And I would, you know, make games and houses and things, crazy things for my dolls and toys. And it was just crazy. So that was one thing. But other times I would ask her if she would let me, quote unquote, cook. Now I say cook between quotes, right? Because it was more like grabbing as many ingredients as I could reach in the kitchen and putting them in a bowl. And then I would turn whatever came out of that bowl into usually inedible cookies in the form of caterpillars. Don't ask me why caterpillars. I could talk about that forever. And that's a story for another day. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, the reason I'm telling you this story is because even back then, I was not afraid to experiment in the kitchen. And had I known that chocolate went amazingly well with raspberries, for example, or that pears and something creamy and tangy just go together, they pop with flavor, or that rice and lemon zest should get married and have babies ASAP, right? if I had known these types of tricks, I would have saved my mother from so many disgusting caterpillar cookie taste tests, because of course I always made her eat them afterwards. And I'm talking bowls that had, you know, flour and ketchup in them. So that's the kind of caterpillar cookie that my mom had to eat afterwards. So if I had known this, things would have been better, right, for my mother. So taking risks and trying things out in the kitchen is a total must. It's a must. You have to do this if you want to improve your cooking skills. And I know many of the people who listen to this podcast and who are members of our program, this is what you want. You want to get better at cooking. And it's always helpful to get by with a little help from your friends, right? And by friends, I mean food pairings. This is what I'm talking about. So are you ready? I'm going to get right into this. And, you know, these are just some more vegan food pairings and ideas on what to do with them. Okay. Remember, I give you a couple of ideas of things you can do. And remember that these are in no particular order or category. And of course, you can go back to part one to check out even more duos and things to do with them. So first on the list is roasted fennel and lemon. I've encountered so many people who tell me they hate fennel. And when they tell me that, I ask, have you had roasted fennel? Because roasted fennel has nothing. It can't even compare with raw fennel. It has this sweet taste and the texture is just crazy delicious. So with lemon, it goes really well. Now, here's what you do. You can put sliced fennel in a casserole dish with some leeks and carrots, chopped leeks and carrots into chunks. Toss a tiny drizzle of olive oil and salt and pepper and with all of that, and put some lemon slices on top. So slice up a lemon and put the lemon slices on top. It looks gorgeous. And you're going to let everything get nice and caramelized in the oven. And then when you sit down to eat, you spread the sweet lemon, because lemon, when roasted, turns a little bit sweet. It's delicious. You're going to spread it on the veggies as you eat it. It will blow your mind. So yeah, lemon and fennel, they just work. Okay, tomato and basil. This is the ultimate classic, and I can't believe I didn't mention it in our previous post on this matter. You know, a simple salad with tomato wedges and lots of fresh basil, a drizzle of olive oil, some sea salt and pepper. That's just perfect, just like that. It's going to do wonders for your soul, I promise you. So tomato basil, really good, classic. The next one is zucchini and paprika. Now, whenever you're grilling or roasting or sauteing zucchini, add a sprinkle of paprika. This just makes the flavors shine even more. These go so, so well together. Really good. All right, next up on the list is couscous or orzo and roasted peppers. So it doesn't matter what you're making with the couscous or orzo. It can be a salad or a cooked entree or part of some antipasti, anything like that. You know, you just combine cooked couscous or orzo, a nice vinaigrette, any vinaigrette you like. Lemon goes really well with this, and some roasted vegetables. This combo is fantastic. That's really all you need. You can also add some chickpeas if you want to add a little more protein. But especially with red and yellow bell peppers, if you've roasted them or you've grilled them and cut them and mixed them with the couscous or orzo and that vinaigrette, so good. All right, next on the list is roasted garlic and anything. Roasted garlic and anything, especially seitan. If you're doing a nice seitan roast or a seitan filet or anything like that with seitan, roasted garlic goes great with it. And the seitan, if you don't know, is the vegan meat that we make with gluten. It's very easy to make. We have recipes in our online program. So roasted garlic, it's just one of those things that goes great in anything, especially a nice roast or food for the holidays, anything like that. You know, sauces, veggie burgers. It's great in veggie burgers if you put it in the mix. Dressings, pasta dishes, pizza. I mean, it's incredible. But next to a yummy seitan roast, it's really delicious. So what you do after you've roasted your heads of garlic is you kind of scoop out the little cloves. They're going to be very mushy. It's going to be like butter, and you get to spread it on like butter on your other foods, and you will be in heaven. I can't tell you how delicious this is. It's a great idea to kind of do this when you're batch cooking. If you're batch cooking anything for the week, get some garlic cloves in the oven and roast them until they're tender and just keep them at home so you can use them in recipes. All right, next one on the list is fried plantains and guacamole. So if you don't know what plantains are, they're these very big banana-looking fruits, and it's very, very large. It's very different from a banana because you cannot eat it raw. So it's not something you can peel. In fact, peeling it, you need a knife to peel it properly. And you know, it's just very different. It's very different in taste. It's very typical in Latin American, Cuban cuisine, and things like that. Island cuisines, Jamaica, places like this. Very typical. So you can find yellow plantains and green plantains, and they have different applications. So yellow plantains are going to be sweeter and softer. Green plantains, it's better to fry them up and they're going to be savory, a little more savory. So the combo, the perfect combo is fried plantains and guacamole. So they just go great with avocado, even if it's just in chunks. It's delicious. It's a perfect combination, especially the fried green plantains. And this is just going to make your taste buds pop. It's so delicious. In my country of Venezuela, this is called tostones. And they are fried green plantain rounds that you fry up in some oil. And then you can eat it with some salt or your favorite dipping sauces or with guacamole, which is what we do at our house. It's really yummy, really good. But any type of plantain goes great with guac. And if you don't want to fry it, then get the yellow plantain and you can roast it in the oven and use it with guacamole too. It's really good. Okay, rice and mango. Rice and mango is such a good combination. Rice, oh God, it goes well with so many things. You're going to hear it. It's a common thread in the previous episode on the topic and in today's. Rice is just wonderful, right? But rice and mango, they're really good. And this is a common combo in Southeast Asia. So here's what you can do. You can make some sticky rice or just cook white rice in some coconut milk instead of water, which will add a different kind of taste. And add some mango and add some shredded coconut and have the perfect dish. It goes well with so many things. And by the way, you can also turn this into a mango coconut rice pudding type dish for dessert, right? So you can make the savory with that sweetness of the mango or make it completely sweet. And the coconut mango rice combo is really good. All right. An easier version, this is like the version for lazy people, is rice and mango chutney. So it's just so much easier than the previous one. Not that the previous one is hard, but here you just make rice like you normally do, and you add some mango chutney on top. And this goes great served with some crispy tofu and some bok choy. This is a perfect meal. I love it so much together. The flavors really go well together. And if you don't know how to cook bok choy, by the way, go to the recipe section of our online program or to our YouTube channel. And there's a video on my favorite way to cook it. Really easy. It takes, I think it's three ingredients or something like that, and 5 minutes. It's really good. Okay. Basil and avocado. This is one that, you know, people don't often think of because we think of avocado and cilantro as going together. And that is certainly the case. But I'm always thinking of my cilantro haters out there, right? There are people on this planet who cannot stand the taste of cilantro. And it's because they lack an enzyme or something in their bodies, in their tongues. And cilantro tastes in a strange way. I'm not sure if it tastes a little bit like soap or something. Like, it has this very chemical, strange taste for some people. And there's a biological reason for that. So I want to give you another option for avocados. Now, people normally think that the next best choice next to cilantro is parsley. And I have to tell you, I disagree. The sweet notes of basil and the creamy, fruity flavors of the avocado, they just really go well together. So I love pairing these two in things like sandwiches and wraps with the rest of my fillings, for example. That's my favorite use of avocado and basil. I wouldn't use basil in a guacamole. I use cilantro. But if you can't stand cilantro, maybe try it. And of course, you can make it without, you know, just make the guac with your favorite fixings without any herbs. But I think it does change the flavor and it's really good. All right, next up, tofu and pineapple. These go so well together, especially if you make a tofu and veggie sweet and sour stir fry by just adding some pineapple cubes to the stir fry when you're making it. And you can see me making this dish in our YouTube channel and in the recipe section at brownwell.com. I think it's called Quick Sweet and Sour Quick Sweet and Sour Stir Fry with Tofu and Pineapple or something like that. All right, next up on the list, noodles and grapefruit. What did she just say? Yeah, noodles and grapefruit. Very unusual. This especially goes great in a soba noodle salad with any kind of spicy dressing that includes sriracha or sambal oleic. Sambal oleic is this kind of, it's another type of spicy chili paste, but it's mild and it has lots of different tones to it. It's really good. And if you make a dressing with this, with some ginger, with some sesame oil, and you're making a soba noodle salad with some crunchy veggies, the soba noodles, of course, and a little bit of, you can add a little chili oil if you want, some soy sauce, a little bit of agave, add some grapefruit, add a little piece of grapefruit, small, well, not small, maybe like half of one little piece, or one little grapefruit segment. And don't ask me why, it just works. It really works. You might not like it, but I love it. So Brussels sprouts and maple syrup is next on the list. Now, Brussels sprouts goes great with that savory sweet combo. Really good, especially in the fall, right? When we have this kind of tradition to pair sweet and savory together. So all you have to do is roast the sprouts, tossed in a little bit of oil if you want to, and maple syrup. So you toss that in all of that. And you roast them until they're nice and golden, not mushy. Do not mush up your Brussels sprouts. That is like culinary suicide. Do not do that. Brussels sprouts are meant to have bite. So just roast them until you can prick them with a fork or a skewer, but they still have a little bit of resistance. And once they're roasted, you can toss this with things like pecans or pomegranate seeds or raspberries even. So it's really delicious. Brussels sprouts and maple, they really go well together. Okay, speaking of, you know, the fall season, the holiday season, sage, you know, the herb sage and non-dairy butter. And in this case, I'm talking about fresh sage, not dried sage. It's a little bit different, the effect that I want to teach you right now. So fried sage, it has long been a culinary pairing with things like gnocchi or butternut squash or pastas, risottos. But many people are unfamiliar with this herb and how to use it in recipes. And it smells kind of strong when you just, you know, take it in your hands and you smell it. You kind of don't realize what it can go with because it changes a lot once it's, you know, cooked in a little bit of oil or butter. And so here's how you do it, right? You melt some non-dairy butter in a pan, and you don't need very much, just a little bit, unless you're making like a sauce for a lot of pasta or something, you know, something like that. But you melt that non-dairy butter, you add the whole sage leaves, whole, you know, the whole big leaves, and you let them sizzle in that butter, not at too high heat because you don't want anything burning, but kind of a medium heat. You let that sizzle and you let that infuse the butter. And then you add the rest of the ingredients of whatever dish you're making to that pan where you have that non-dairy butter and the sage. If you don't have non-dairy butter at home, you can also do this with a little bit of olive oil. But for some reason, non-dairy butter is my favorite. It really works. And it's the traditional way, the traditionally, you know, culinary way of frying sage. So the smell alone, my goodness, you'll feel like you're in your grandma's house for Christmas. It's really delicious and it's very easy. Okay, speaking of herbs, next one includes oregano, and I'm talking about eggplant and oregano. So here's what you do with this one. It's my favorite way. We actually had this for dinner last night, along with some other goodies. I made kind of like a Middle Eastern platter. But I thinly slice eggplant, like, you know, thin slices of eggplant. You place them on a cookie sheet. You add a drizzle of olive oil. You add some oregano, salt, and pepper. And then you roast them in the oven until very tender and golden. And so tender that they're almost falling apart and very buttery. That's when you know that they're done. And that's it. It's so delicious. And then you can add the ingredient that I'm going to talk about in the next pairing to just make it shine even brighter. So that ingredient is hummus. So this pairing is roasted or grilled eggplant and hummus. So all you have to do, if you have made the roasted eggplant, or even if you're grilling it in the barbecue and you've cooked it until it's almost buttery, you just add a dollop of hummus on top. It's divine. It really works. It really works. And here you can add all sorts of other goodies, right? You can add some sweet potatoes to this dish, some, you know, roasted sweet potatoes. You can add some quinoa, some rice. You can add some falafel. You can just make this into a whole meal based on that pairing. It's really delicious. Okay, now I'm going to talk about my current obsession, and we're going to film this for you soon because I can't get enough of this, and it's basmati rice, cilantro, and lemon. And lemon and rice, let me just start by saying that lemon and rice are a match made in heaven. But this particular one is like the perfect trifecta, especially if you also include a little bit of the zest of the lemon, not only the juice, but the zest. And I promise we'll have a recipe for you soon, but you can get started by just tossing some cooked basmati with tons of fresh cilantro, some lemon juice, and some of the zest. This is the quick version, okay? But the one I'm going to teach you involves all of these ingredients in the cooking process so that the flavors of the lemon really infuse those grains of rice. So I'm going to teach this technique to you really soon. It's so good. Okay, next on the list is, are sesame seeds, garlic powder, and paprika or chili powder. I'm going to say that again. Sesame seeds, garlic powder, and paprika or chili powder. Now, what you're going to do with this is you're going to grind all of these together in a blender or in a spice or coffee grinder. And this is kind of a simplified version of gomaccio. Gomaccio is something you'll find at health food stores already made, and you'll often find it in vegetarian or vegan restaurants served at the table to sprinkle on top of your dishes. This is a powder that you can add to many recipes. You can add it to veggie burgers. You can add it to soups. You can add it on top of your dishes. You can add it to rice when you're cooking it. I mean, it's just very versatile, and you can, of course, as I mentioned, add it as a finishing spice to whatever dish you're preparing. And you can add many other spices to gomaccio. There are many different types. The essential ingredient gomaccio are those sesame seeds. You can add, people add dried seaweed, for example, for added minerals. And this powder is not only delicious, it really adds a pop of flavor to anything, but it provides an excellent source of calcium because of those sesame seeds. By the way, did you know that sesame seeds are the highest source of calcium on the planet? The food that has the most calcium, sesame seeds. That's why eating tahini and gomaccio is really, really helpful. Really good for your health. Okay, next up. This is a weird one. You're going to say, what on earth? This is kind of like the grapefruit one, but just trust me a little bit. Trust me and try it. You might not like this, right? We have different taste preferences. This one has to do with putting together papaya, the fruit, tropical fruit, papaya, jerk seasoning, and chimichurri sauce. Do not ask me why this just works. This is something that I started experimenting with after reading Mark Bittman's amazing book, How to Cook Everything Vegetarian. It's a Bible. It's a culinary Bible. And it's not 100% vegan, but there's many, many, many vegan recipes in there. And it just teaches you a lot about cooking. It was one of my greatest teachers when I was studying cooking and when I still study cooking techniques now. So these three go really well together. So here's what you do. You cut the papaya into wedges. You add jerk seasoning, or it can also be your favorite Cajun seasoning. It's slightly different, but it will work. And you roast the papaya. You roast it in the oven. And then you toss it with some crispy or grilled tofu, or you serve the crispy or grilled tofu on the side. And you put some chimichurri sauce all over. And you serve all of that over rice. So you got your rice. You've got your papaya that is roasted with that jerk seasoning. You've got the crispy or grilled tofu and the chimichurri sauce on top. Doesn't that sound good? Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, next up, also on the fruit trend, watermelon and tomatoes. Did you know that these go really well together? Really well. And my favorite way of serving these together is as part of a salad with olives and some onions, some very thinly sliced red onions so that it doesn't overpower the dish, but it's really good. And you just use a tangy, lemony style vinaigrette and it just works. The textures and the flavors really good. Really good in this type of salad. Okay, another perfect pairing are leeks, potatoes, and bechamel. Leeks and potatoes have long been, you know, a married couple. They're one of those married couples that have been married for 50 years, right? And one of the typical uses of this combo is vichyssoise. And vichyssoise is the potato and leek soup, the typical French potato and leek soup. So here I want to change this pairing into a different dish. You can absolutely make that. It's delicious. That soup is delicious. But you can make a casserole of roasted leeks and potatoes with some delicious gooey bechamel. And if you're a member of our online program, you know that we have recently posted a video on, you know, sauce making basics. And I taught you how to make a classic bechamel. And so you cover it with that bechamel, you cook it until bubbly, and then you have the option of adding some vegan cheese on top if you'd like. It's not necessary, but if you want to, you can do that. And we will be filming a leek and potato gratin really soon for our online program to show this technique. So if you're a member, that's coming really soon. But just putting leeks and potatoes and bechamel and popping it in the oven, that's going to give you a great result. Next on our list are artichokes and pesto. This is another current obsession, and it really goes well together, especially if that pesto is very lemony, and you can make it even with parsley, right? Instead of basil. If you don't have basil and you have lots of parsley lying around, the parsley pesto really works with the artichokes. So just roast some artichoke hearts and then you add basil or parsley pesto on top, and that's it. That's really easy, right? Okay, cumin and lemon, another great pairing. And this can be used as part of a Middle Eastern style vinaigrette, or you can add some chili powder and turn it into a dressing for a corn and bean salad, for example. And we recently made a video for a roasted corn and bean salad for vegan outreach, and you can find that at our website, bramble.com, or in their YouTube channel. And it's really good. Cumin and lemon, they work. So start adding some cumin to your dressings if you want to kind of mix things up. They go really well together. Okay, sweet potatoes and chipotle hot sauce. Another match made in heaven. And if you've ever made our Southwestern black bean, kale, and sweet potato bowl, which is also at bramble.com and in our YouTube channel, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't made it, you can go make it and then you can thank us later. This is such a quick and filling dish. And the sweet potatoes with that chipotle hot sauce is incredible. Now, I have tried many types of hot sauce throughout my life because I love spicy foods. And sriracha is a favorite and sambal oleic is a favorite. But when it comes to sweet potatoes, the best one is Heinz chipotle hot sauce. It's fantastic. It's really good. So it's very basic. You can find that in any supermarket. All right. Next up on the list, parsley and any type of creamy sauce. Whether you're using, for example, lemon, butter, and capers for a piccata style sauce, and you've got like a buttery type sauce, whether it's that or you're making a rich, creamy Alfredo sauce, parsley is your go-to herb. It should be your go-to herb when you have a creamy sauce. It really works. And we have a recipe for a delicious fettuccine Alfredo. And you can find that, again, I sound like a broken record. You know, right? You can find that at bramble.com in the recipe section or in our YouTube channel. I'm not going to say it again after this one, I promise. But you've got our fettuccine Alfredo, which is really delicious. It's one of our popular recipes. And I always tell you, add some parsley. It's typical in creamy sauces. Okay, sweet potatoes and orange juice are another typical one. And here you can make a delicious mashed sweet potato casserole or sweet potato puree by adding a bit of freshly squeezed orange juice to the rest of the ingredients in your recipe. Now, typically a recipe like this includes some non-dairy butter, some cinnamon, some nutmeg, some non-dairy milk or cream, and your sweet potatoes. And you can add a little bit of orange juice to that. And if you're a member of our online program, we have a recipe for a creamy sweet potato puree that includes orange juice. You're going to love it. Okay, cauliflower and tomato. Here I'm going to tell you about, you know, sometimes I get a kind of culinary envy. And I get very jealous when somebody who says they don't really cook create something that is so incredibly delicious and decadent that I can't even begin to think of how they made it. And this happened to me a couple of weeks ago. We went to a friend's house and she had made a vegan lasagna for us. They're not vegan, by the way, so this was even more special because of it. They made a vegan lasagna for us in which the bolognese sauce was made with finely chopped cauliflower, along with some other vegetables, and of course, lots of tomatoes. And it almost made me cry, honestly. It just almost made me cry. I don't think any of the lasagnas I have ever made come close to this. And it could be that this woman is just a diamond in the rough. And she just is getting started with cooking, but she has this incredible palate. And the sauce was fantastic. It was a very rich bolognese sauce, very red, lots of tomatoes, lots of onions and garlic and other vegetables in there. And the chopped cauliflower. And cauliflower and tomato just go great together in so many other dishes. But this, I had to give you this example because I had to talk about the fact that I'm just so jealous that she made this incredible dish. I want to learn how to, I want her to teach me how to make it. I want her to come to Bramble and teach us how to make it. All right, so next up, apricots and caramelized onions, another fruit and veggie combo. So here what you can do is you can grill your apricots. And yeah, grilling fruits is amazing. It really boosts the sugars in the fruit. Roasting works too, but it sometimes dries the fruit out a little bit if you leave it in there for too long. So grilling has more direct heat and therefore gets, you know, retains those juices, but it gets those grill marks, it gets the char, and it boosts the sugars in the fruit. So you get a very decadent treat. So you grill your apricots until juicy and tender. Of course, you have to take the, you know, the little seed out, the bone out, the pit, bone, what am I talking about? The pit of your apricot. You take it out, you have it, and you put the halves on the grill. And you grill them until they're juicy and tender. And you, on a separate pan. By the way, when I say grill and I say barbecue, if you don't have a barbecue, you can use a grill pan. It also works. So on another pan, you're going to caramelize some onions. So what you do is you toss them with, to caramelize onions, you just put them with a little bit of non-dairy butter in a pan, some sugar, a little bit of salt, and you let those cook really slowly until they turn brown and they're nice and sweet. And the sugar is optional, but it really does speed up the process. If not, you're going to be there forever. So a little bit of sugar, it can be brown sugar. It adds a little bit of molassesy taste. That's a word I just made up, but it works. Okay, so you toss the grilled apricots and your caramelized onions. You toss them together with a little bit of lemon juice and lemon zest, a little bit of olive oil, and you use that kind of compote. It's not a compote, but let's call it a compote, to top any rice dishes or seitan or tempeh steaks. So really, oh, it's so good. It's so, so, so good. Okay, another pairing that includes fruits include blueberries and lemon zest. Add some lemon zest whenever you're making blueberry cobblers or tarts or blueberry jams. It really goes well together. It's a combination of flavors that really, really works. Okay, next up, red onions and radishes. If you're a member of my Bramble, you recently saw me make this quick pickle of onions and radishes. So basically what you do, you can watch the video if you're a member for more directions, but basically what you do is you make a quick pickle of both of these. Yeah. Oh, my dogs are making a racket. Can you hear them? They're just going nutty because it's time to go for a walk. And we're almost done with the list. So they're getting it soon. So sorry if you heard that. But okay, back to the topic. You make a quick pickle of both of, you know, the red onions and the radishes, very thinly sliced, with some apple cider vinegar, some water, and some salt until they turn soft and pink. And then you drain the liquid and you use this as a topping for tacos. Really good, right? Okay, next up on the list is some saffron and rice. So this is the star combination that created the Spanish paella. If you've ever had paella, this is what you're having. You're having rice that has been infused with saffron. Saffron is a beautiful spice that actually, it's like little threads, like mini, mini, really thin red threads that come from a flower. I mean, how crazy magical is that? And I think it's very, it can sometimes be expensive because, you know, one little thing, I think one little thread of saffron comes from one flower. It's really crazy. You can get, you know, very, very few from a group of flowers. So it's a very special treat. And this is typical in the Spanish paella. This saffron has a flavor and a color because it can color your food. That's why paella is yellow. Paella is not made with yellow rice. The rice is white and it turns yellow because of the saffron. So saffron has a lot of magical things to it, but it has a flavor that no other herb or spice has. It is completely unique. And so if you're making a paella, use it. We have a vegetable paella recipe in the online program, and you can practice with that. But if you're not a member and your paella feels a little bit tricky or challenging, you can make a simple batch of rice. And what you do, instead of making it how you normally would, is you saute your rice, not the cooked rice, but before you cook the rice, you know, your raw rice, you saute it with a little bit of olive oil and some chopped onions and peppers. And once you see that the rice is slightly translucent around the edges, here you're basically toasting the rice, you add lots of saffron strands or the little, you know, the little threads of saffron, or you can also use powdered paella saffron or seasoning. It's basically they have taken the saffron and powdered it, and it's a more concentrated form. And you add either of those to the pan. And then you add vegetable broth and you cook the rice as you normally would. So that's a beginner version to start getting acquainted with this, with saffron and how to use it. And yeah, it's really good. Saffron has this incredible flavor. By the way, risottos made with saffron are very typical. There is a very, very typical risotto that is done with this technique. Well, not with this technique I just mentioned for the rice, but, you know, with risotto technique. Okay, last one on the list. We were done. One more. Kale, avocado, and lime. So if you're a kale fan, all you have to do for this one is mash the avocado and add the lime to the mashed avocado, and you massage this into the kale. So you take your fingers and you massage the kale until it kind of wilts. That completely changes the texture and the flavor of kale. If you don't like kale, you might want to try this because the taste isn't as pungent. It isn't as strong. And then you sprinkle all of this with sea salt and pepper and some nutritional yeast, and you grab a fork and you dig in. That's all you need. You can add some sliced radishes if you want, but that's pretty much it. That's all you need. Oh, by the way, the gomaccio we talked about later also works really well with this salad. And you know, there are hundreds and possibly thousands more. And as I write this episode and as I record this episode, I'm kind of getting inspired for a new series. And instead of doing this big mashup, how about I give you different pairings that you could try and experiment with, but only for one main ingredient? For example, right? All the perfect pairings for lemons. in one episode and all the perfect pairings for potatoes in another, or the perfect pairings for tomatoes, so that you really start learning what these ingredients can do and what flavors they go well with. And you kind of, I think it might be easier to remember some of these, but you know, it's, I think it could be a good idea if you're, for example, craving a tomato recipe, but you're not sure in which direction you should go if you're creating a recipe on your own. So I guess this is just food for thought for me for later. And this, of course, always means that I'm already excited and then that I'm writing it in my head at this very moment. But it's probably a good idea. It really will help expand your knowledge of cooking. But you can get started with all of the countless pairings that I gave you between this episode and part one, too. So until then, I just kind of want to ask you if you have any favorite pairings that you turn to time and time again. Maybe if you live in another country and there are spices that I didn't mention that you think people would love and what to do with them, you can go to the post that goes to this, that corresponds with this episode, and leave these options in the comments. And of course, don't forget to share the post and share this episode with all of those foodies in your life who kind of want to start making more plant-based dishes. This really helps to know what things go really well together. That's pretty much it. That's all I have for you today when it comes to pairings. And thank you so much for listening. It was really a lot of fun. I can talk about food for hours. So yeah, it was fun. It was fun to talk to you about this stuff. Now, if you'd like to support this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you could subscribe and also leave us an awesome rating and review on iTunes. You know, this really helps us rank higher in searches and it helps other people who need this information find us. So to leave us a rating and review, all you have to do this on your phone is open your podcast app, click the search icon, type in Brownbowl, and then you go to our podcast, click on the reviews tab, and then you click write a review and you leave your review. Pretty easy, right? Now, you can't do it from your own subscription feed to the podcast. I do not know why. iTunes, you have to get on this. It's going to make it so much easier for people, but you have to do it from the search, like I just mentioned. But that's it. It's pretty easy. Now, if you want to do it on your computer, if that's easier for you, all you have to do is open your iTunes, type in Brownbowl in the search bar, go to ratings and reviews, and you leave it there. I will be so grateful if you can take the time to do this, since we really want to support others on their journey. And this content is completely free. It's always going to be free. So all we need is to reach other people who are looking for this information and looking for support. And of course, we need your help to do it. We can't do it without your help. When you leave us those ratings and reviews, it helps our podcast appear when people search for certain keywords, or they search for terms like vegan or vegan podcast or transition to vegan, things like that. So we really need your help and we can't thank you enough. And of course, thank you so much for listening today. And as usual, I'll see you next week with more on Thursday. That's our little date. Bye-bye.